Podcast. You are tuned into Corbett Report Radio, and I am your host, as always, for the next hour of radio transmission, James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. The Declaration of Internet Freedom reads as follows, quote, "We stand for a free and open Internet. We support transparent and participatory processes for making Internet policy and the establishment of five basic principles. One, expression. Don't censor the Internet. Two, access. Promote universal access to fast and affordable networks. Three, openness. Keep the Internet an open network where everyone is free to connect, communicate, write, read, watch, speak, listen, learn, create, and innovate. Number four, innovation. Protect the freedom to innovate and create without permission. Don't block new technologies, and don't punish innovators for their users' actions. Number five, privacy. Protect privacy and defend everyone's ability to control how their data and devices are used." End quote. Well, that is the Declaration of Internet Freedom. And certainly, Internet freedom is something that has greatly concerned this broadcast and indeed all of the work that I do at CorbettReport.com since the inception of the website, because quite obviously, quite evidently, it's something that's very important to myself as someone who uses the Internet as his main means of expression and indeed his way of making his living. The Internet and our access to the Internet is extremely important to me and something that I have talked about time and time again on this radio broadcast and in my podcast and interviews and videos and articles. So I think this is probably something that most of you will at least be familiar with and at least starting to think about, as I myself have started to think about it very seriously over the last 5 years, and obviously even longer than that. But the question of Internet freedom is actually not as straightforward as we might like to think it is. And this is where we start to encounter the problem that I see coming down the road. As more and more people are thinking about the nature and the meaning of freedom and trying to advocate for more freedom in our society as a response to the totalitarian measures that we saw instituted in the wake of 9/11, specifically in the Department of Fatherland Security and the TSA and all of the craziness that has been instituted in the name of security, well, there is obviously a natural and healthy reaction to that in the name of freedom. And Internet freedom is most assuredly part of that backlash. But the question is, what does that even mean? I think we run the risk of using freedom as a buzzword behind which anyone can rally around that buzzword and get people to rally around as well, and get people to support an agenda and a cause that at its base is antithetical to freedom. So what some people call Internet freedom might mean something completely different than what you and I are talking about on a daily basis, really, here at the Corbett Report, when we talk about freedom. Is freedom the freedom to, for example, have the government come in and tell companies how to run their business? Well, of course not. In fact, on its face, that's exactly the type of freedom that we're trying to educate the public about, that's not freedom at all. So why is it freedom when we apply it in the Internet realm? Now, today is going to be a pretty controversial idea, I guess, because I know that a lot of people are definitely very protective of what they perceive to be Internet freedoms, and I'm sure many people would expect me to be on a certain side of this debate because I'm a broadcaster here who makes his living through the Internet and is only coming to you from the auspices of my living room here in Japan because of the Internet's existence. But that doesn't mean that I think we need the big stick of government to come in and regulate that Internet and tell people how to run it. And that is precisely the nature of this Declaration of Internet Freedom that's making its rounds on the Internet, and which I will link to in the show notes for tonight's episode so you can go and read for yourself. And there is a lot to say on this, but we're up against the first break, so let's take a short breather, and I'll be back to talk more about Internet freedom right after this. Back to the broadcast, friends. Once again, you are tuned into Corbett Report Radio, and I am James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. Tonight, we're talking about the concept of Internet freedom, and And once again, I want to warn about the risk of treating this type of freedom as some sort of special type of freedom that is somehow different and apart from the other freedoms that we think about and are advocating for here on this broadcast. Of course, the internet is a new medium, and it is very exciting and very different from any medium that has really existed in the history of the planet. It's a point that I've made before on this broadcast, and I will make again and again, that we are living through an amazing revolution right now. And the real chance to seize the power of the internet in really freeing up and opening the distribution of information, to use that as a true liberation, a cognitive liberation, to really free ourselves from the control that we've been subjected to under the old paradigms of information distribution, where a very, very few companies could basically control everything that you read, see, and hear. Well, we're moving out of that paradigm, and we have the internet to thank for it. So in that sense, the internet is exactly what a lot of people think it to be. It is a new and exciting way of distributing information, and it does have the power to change our society. And that's why so many people are so worked up about internet freedom. That's why, for example, as we covered on New World Next Week, newworldnextweek.com, just on the most recent episode, the European Parliament just struck down ACTA, that international treaty that was going to institute all sorts of draconian laws about the ways that that people would be monitored, tracked, and ultimately held legally accountable for what's happening on the internet in various bad ways. Well, that was just struck down by the European Parliament. Everyone's celebrating. Yay, yay, yay. Well, okay, there's those types of issues. But I think we have to look more fundamentally at what types of freedoms are involved when we're talking about internet freedom. And I think we will find that it's the same types of freedoms that we have been advocating for and arguing for in different spheres. So that, for example, freedom of speech is obviously an issue on the internet. But most people don't think of it in the way that they think of it in real life. They think of it as a special internet freedom. So in this case, for example, it should be plainly obvious that the government, just as in real life, should not be able to step in and censor your access to a website or to a video or to what have you because it's unpopular or because it says something that's potentially offensive or whatever that case may be, just as in real life. We advocate for freedom of speech, and I, as a non-American, greatly admire the American tradition of free speech, which really is the greatest expression of the principle of free speech that has ever been achieved in any society in history. It has been achieved in America. It's obviously being eroded right now, but still it is enshrined in the Constitution, and most people would at least say that they think the idea is a good one, even if it is being implemented in flawed ways. Free speech is fundamental to what's happening on the internet. So that means that the government, for example, can't come in between you and a website and say, you can't go there because we don't like this information. Of course, we know this is exactly what's happening, and increasingly so, as Google has released their transparency report talking about the various government censorship requests that they've taken and complied with from countries around the world. Twitter has just released their own version talking about YouTube, Twitter accounts that they have given governments access to because the governments weren't happy with what those people were tweeting. So we know that this is going on, that governments are stepping in, and of course we can see quite plainly in various other polities around the world where China, for instance, the Great Firewall, where people don't have access to the great majority of the internet because it's uncomfortable information for the powers that shouldn't be. So in that sense, freedom to access anything online is an internet freedom, is not a special freedom. That's freedom of speech issue. But in the exact same way as we would not want the government to be able to come into your business, for example, and tell you what you can or can't or must or mustn't say when you're in your business, for example, we wouldn't expect the government to come in with laws to mandate that this or that be said or not said on websites in general, some sort of blanket law. So that's where we start to run into problems where people, for example, are advocating for laws that would require balance on the internet, the way that laws used to exist on the American airwaves in radio, for example. You must have balanced commentary, by which they mean you must subscribe to the two-headed beast hydra system of the left and the right, and you must have a right commentator and a left commentator, and they must have equal time to make their points, and blah, 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 which, of course, is just government-mandated mind control. We wouldn't expect that on the internet, although there have been proposals. If there's a conspiracy theory website, for example, there must be a link. The government must come in and mandate that there must be a link to a more reputable source that will refute what's being said. So we've seen all sorts of ideas for that, and people understand that to be draconian censorship. So in that sense, it's a freedom of speech issue, and we can look at it as freedom of speech issues have been looked at historically. It's not fundamentally different in that sense. Well, how about the other senses? For example, people talk about net neutrality. This is an important concept and one that you will often hear on the people who claim to be advocating internet freedom. And net neutrality is basically the principle that the internet is an open network and it doesn't differentiate between packets of data. So data coming from the Corbett Report's website will be absolutely treated no differently by any point on that network than, for example, data coming from CNN or what have you. This is important because it means that no particular website can be throttled. It can't have its access reduced so that, for example, it takes 100 hours to download a file from the Corbett Report, but it only takes 1 minute from CNN. If we move to that type of system where data is being treated differentially, of course, there's the not censorship per se, but a type of de facto censorship. No one's going to wait around forever for a tiny file to download from an unpopular website if they can go to a popular mainstream website and get it in 10 seconds. Well, I shouldn't say no one would do that, but very few people would do that. So net neutrality is something that's become quite important for a lot of people who seem to be advocating internet freedom. But the concept is an interesting one because it's basically saying that the internet service providers, the people who lay the pipe, so to speak, the Comcasts and what have you, they must be mandated to treat all data the same way. So they can't themselves come up with a policy that we say we will allow CNN or what have you, whatever the case may be, to have more bandwidth than the Corbett Report, for example. Well, that's interesting because that means that what the people who are advocating for net neutrality are saying is we must have the big stick of government to come in and tell those businesses how to differentiate or not differentiate the data that's flowing through their pipes. Well, that's an interesting idea, isn't it? Wouldn't it be more logical for people who are advocating freedom to say that, well, businesses should have the freedom to run that business in whatever the way they want and institute whatever kinds of stupid policies they want that would be shooting themselves in the foot? Because I personally, and I imagine many other people out there, once they become informed on the issues, wouldn't subscribe to an internet service provider that's going to give them that type of crippled internet service. I wouldn't pay them a single red penny of my money or a single silver yen if you're living over here. But I wouldn't pay them a single anything to get a service like that that has been deliberately hobbled and deliberately crippled. So why on earth would anyone else? That's the principle. The principle is that we should have the freedom to say no to those corporations, and those corporations should have the freedom to provide their whatever type of crippled and hobbled service they want. Because if there is a demand for an alternative, if there is a demand to say, no, we won't subscribe to that type of service, we want a service that is net neutral, then companies will arise. There will be people who will be able to provide that service, and they will get our money. They will get our customership, our patronage, because we do value those things, and we vote with our dollars. That is the principle of the system. That is how, really, what freedom comes down to, the freedom for an individual to choose and for a business to run its business the way it wants. That is the principle of free market economics. So interestingly enough, some people are trying to group a lot of things under the rubric, under the umbrella of internet freedom that I think don't apply. And this Declaration of Internet Freedom, it's interesting, and I agree with certain parts of it. Certainly don't censor the internet sounds like a good idea. But something, let's look at one of the privacy, for example. It says, protect privacy and defend everyone's ability to control how their data and devices are used. Well, again, that's an interesting concept. So who is going to defend everyone's ability to control their devices? Is that going to be the government coming in with laws to say that companies have to make their devices in this way or that way so that users have this option for privacy, or they can, you know, they have to default to having the GPS location tracking off or whatever, people have to opt in. So if you're going to say that the government should come in and make laws that require companies to make their products in that particular way, Again, it's the big stick of government approach. Well, if we can just get our guys into office and they can make the laws with the big stick and beat down everyone else we don't like and make those companies do what we want, then everything will be okay. Of course, that establishes the principle that it's okay for the government to come in and tell companies how to run their business, how to make their products. So that, for example, if the bad guys somehow get into office, oh, that would never happen, then they could mandate that whatever they want. They could mandate that those businesses make it an obligation to track their customers, which in fact is exactly what transpired. Anyone who's looked into it, 1994, the CALEA Act, the Communications Assistance for Law Enforcement Act, mandates backdoors in all communications devices so that the government can spy on you. That is the problem of giving a government a big stick to come in and tell businesses how to make their products. They will inevitably use it for their crony purposes to spy and track and surveil you under the name of internet freedom. Oh, we can go in and tell those businesses what to do. Well, this is the problem. People aren't thinking about this on the basic level of freedom in general, not specific internet freedoms, but freedom in general. So if there are companies like, for example, Apple and Microsoft and Google that do have these horrible privacy-destroying things booby-trapped directly in their hardware so there's no way to opt out of them. The iPhone, for example, tracks everywhere you go, even if you opt out of GPS. Look it up. It's true. If there are companies like that, then we shouldn't support them. We shouldn't give them our time, money, effort, and energy. We shouldn't feed those beasts. We should go for a company that comes out there and says, look, we don't track you. Here's the software. It's open source. Go for it. And with that, we can affect change, not the government with their big stick that's going to come down from on high and save us all. Let's take a break. More on internet freedom right after this.
I ain't got no home, ain't got no shoes, ain't got no money, ain't got no class, ain't got no skirts.
Welcome back, friends. You're listening to Corbett Report Radio. Tonight we're talking about the concept of internet freedom and the way that it may be being used and abused by people who are secretly wishing for freedoms to actually be taken away under the name of government coming in and telling everyone what to do and how to do it. Once again, relying on the idea that government is somehow just the big stick that we can use to beat down the people that we don't like, instead of understanding that it is necessarily a tool for thugs to get into positions of power and tell everyone exactly what to do. So I think there is an important debate that should be going on within the internet freedom movement itself. And I think an important front on that debate just opened up. In fact, it's going to be very controversial for all sorts of reasons because of unfortunate political baggage that has been brought to the table, but such is life. And this war is being opened up, this new battlefront on the meaning of freedom is being opened up by the Pauls, Ron and Rand, and the Campaign for Liberty. And this comes from BuzzFeed, which just published this report, The Pauls' New Crusade, Internet Freedom. Quote, Ron and Rand Paul are set today to shift the central focus of their family's long libertarian crusade to a new cause, Internet Freedom. Kentucky Senator Rand and his father, Ron Paul, who has not yet formally conceded the Republican presidential nomination, will throw their weight behind a new online manifesto set to be released today by the Paul-founded Campaign for Liberty. The new push, Paul aides say, will in some ways displace what has been their movement's long-running top priority, shutting down the Federal Reserve Bank. The move is an attempt to stake a libertarian claim to a central public issue of the next decade and to move from the esoteric terrain of high finance to the everyday world of cable modems and Facebook. Well, I'll let you continue reading that report talking about this new manifesto, and in fact, they have the manifesto itself embedded in this article, so I'll, of course, put the link in the show notes so you can go and find it and read it for yourself. Let me just read a little bit of the preamble to this, which is really a response to that Declaration of Internet Freedom that's making the rounds that I opened up the program with. This is called The Technological Revolution, a Campaign for Liberty Manifesto, and it starts, quote, This is what a technology revolution looks like. New innovators create vast new markets where none existed previously. Individual genius, enabled by the truly free market the internet represents, roots around obsolete and ineffective government attempts at control. The arrogant attempts of governments to centralize, intervene, subsidize, micromanage, and regulate innovation is scoffed at and ignored. The revolution is occurring around the world. It is occurring in the private sector, not the public sector. It is occurring despite wrong-headed attempts by governments to micromanage markets through disastrous industrial policy. And it is driven by the internet, the single greatest catalyst in history for individual liberty and free markets. All right, well, I'll leave it there. It's a very interesting document. I really do hope that you guys will go out there and start looking into this and reading it for yourself. I know that, as I say, there's going to be a lot of political baggage brought to the table because this is the polls, this is the Campaign for Liberty, and as everyone is now all too familiar, Rand Paul is absolutely nothing more than a neocon warmonger in libertarian clothes, and he never really espoused any of the ideas that his father did, and of course now supports Mitt Romney as the defender of liberty in America, which is so laughable and ridiculous on its face that it makes you realize that Rand Paul was never really about anything other than what his ads for senator were when he was running for senator last year. And the ads were all about, we've got to get a Rand before they get us and things like this. Well, surprise, surprise, yes, he is just another neocon Republicrat. And as far as I'm concerned, his political future is of no consequence to me at any rate. But having said that, I agree completely with the substance of this document, this technological revolution manifesto from the Campaign for Liberty, talking about how it is the private sector, it is individuals and businesses that are going to innovate and are going to be the driving force of the internet. It is not the government coming in with regulations and control and laws and trying to tell people how to run their businesses that is going to be the savior of internet freedom. So it's an important concept, one we have to start talking about and thinking about, and I don't want people out there to just react with their knee-jerk reactions that, oh, this is just corporatism and you're just in favor of the corporations. That's an absolutely unfair charge, because in a truly free society, without governments and the big stick that they wield, there would be no such thing as corporations, which of course are just fictitious legal entities that have been created and protected by the judicial system, which is one of the three branches of government itself, which would not exist, would not hold force in a truly free society. In a truly free society, of course, people can come together to create corporations, companies, really, but they would not be corporations in the sense that they are today, where individual responsibility can be sworn off, can be hidden behind this corporate umbrella so that individuals can't be held accountable for their actions. In a free society, that would not hold true. So it's not in favor of corporations or the right of corporations to do what they want. It's the right of individuals to run their businesses the way that they want. And then the responsibility becomes ours to not support those companies, to not give our money to all of the companies that want to participate in this shutting down of freedom of speech. And again, many, many, many other issues to talk about. But unfortunately, we're out of time. So this is the Thursday night edition of the broadcast. So in the second half of the broadcast, we're going to switch gears entirely. We're going to start talking about food, health, and the environment with none other than our good friend James Evan Pilato of foodworldorder.com. So let's take a short break. We'll be right back talking about Food World Order right after this.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to Corbett Report Radio, friends. Here we are on the Thursday night edition of the broadcast, and of course that means that in the latter half, we're going to be talking to James Evan Pilato of foodworldorder.com, who is waiting patiently in the wings even as we speak. So we're going to be going over all of the latest news and headlines from the world of food, health, and the environment, and including a binge and purge that I want to say looks particularly anorexic this week, but I really don't want to make light of bulimia and anorexia. I hope people understand that that's not what this is about, but it's just a title for this type of post, binge and purge, which we'll be getting to in the latter part of this update. But first, James, welcome to the program. Welcome back. I can't hear what you're saying, so I hope someone on the board can turn your audio up.
Check 1, 2.
Okay, there we are. Okay, James, great to have you back.
Awesome. Yeah. No, I appreciate it. I always look forward to these. And I'll explain the small binge and purge when we reach it. But I wanted to actually start out by referencing something I mentioned last week, the rally to keep Nestle out of the gorge here in Oregon. I had referenced it last week. Now I do actually have a post on foodworldorder.com that has a bunch of links covering the rally and some of the groups involved, and also the audio that was exclusively recorded by my legendary girlfriend.
The legendary girlfriend of James M. Bellotto. Absolutely, yes. Interesting post. I hope people will check that out. And the fight goes on, I guess.
It does. No immediate word or results or effects of the rally. But to me, it's, you know, the war of public opinion has, I think here, has kind of been won. And it would be a massive, I think, a huge upset if this does actually go through.
It seems like, I mean, obviously I'm not from there, I don't know the area, but it seems like the people of Portland certainly wouldn't be going along with that.
No, it's really just a matter of getting people aware of the issue. And I've been able to kind of talk about it, you know, when appropriate at work. You know, I can't stand at the floor at work and rally about political positions. But when appropriate, you can say, hey, you know, and people go, oh, that's, yeah, I have heard something about that. And mm-hmm. they perk right up. I want to, James.
Go ahead.
Well, you know, you said you didn't want to make light of, you know, eating disorders, and nor do I. But you know, you and I, obviously, we're both kind of skinny boys. I may have stunted my growth with too much coffee and cigarettes early on. Unfortunately, there is an interesting post on calories and new research, and it's been published in the Journal of the American Medical Association about different types of calories and what actually will help you lose weight. But a more interesting tie-in, and I think more apropos for us, James, if we referenced it last week, it was covered on Food World Order. If not, the FDA made this big approval of their first weight loss drug, I think, in nearly decades. There is a Natural News update on this new weight loss pharmaceutical. Apparently, it was rejected by the FDA in 2010 because officials were concerned about those tumors that had developed in animals tested with the drug. I think this new one they're unleashing is called Belviq, B-E-L-V-I-Q. And every time I hear of some new, you know, drug approval that's always hailed and rallied because, you know, it's going, they're so happy it's going to help so many people. It's pretty much you start the countdown of, okay, how long is it going to be before we hear about the recall of this?
Right, the mass heart attacks or whatever the case may be. Unfortunately, that's the way it is, and that comes from a society that wants to have that magic pill that they can pop that'll make everything better. And I guess you can't blame people for wishing that it were that easy, but you can blame them for trusting in the pharmaceutical companies and the corrupt process that approves them. And their monstrosities that they're pawning off on people. There's no substitute for hard work and exercise.
Well, and again, I think you could probably extrapolate that out to all the other issues that we want that just one button fix of, you know, oh, our economic crisis, can we just have a bailout? Or, hey, if I press this button, this other guy will come in and I think he'll solve all my problems.
Right.
James, let's switch to Japan. With a piece from the AFP, Japan finds large deposit of rare earth minerals. Now, this could also be appropriate for cyberspace war in the media monarchy kingdom, but it does relate to our very earth and environment. Japan has found a large deposit of rare earth minerals in its Pacific seabed, enough to supply its high-tech industries for more than 200 years, a scientist said Friday. Around 6.8 million tons of the valuable minerals used in electric cars, iPods, and lasers are sitting under the seabed near a far eastern Japanese island. Tokyo University professor Yoshihiro Kato told the AFP. He said mud samples taken from an area near an island some 2,000 miles southeast of Tokyo. I won't attempt to
pronounce. Minami Torishima. That means South Bird Island, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate that. The scientists, their professor rather, indicated deposits amounted to around 220 times the average annual amount used by the industry in Japan. The seabed contained a substantial amount of dysprosium, a rare earth mineral used in the engines for hybrid cars. Specifically, on dysprosium, I estimate at least 400 years' worth of Japan's current consumption is in the deposit, said the professor, who examined the mud samples taken from the seabed. We can start drilling in the mud using oil extraction technology within 3 years at the earliest and start producing rare earth minerals within 5 years, he said. The find would be the first time large-scale rare earth deposits had been discovered inside Japan's exclusive economic zone. James, take it.
Well, it's an interesting story. I guess it's a good thing for Japan and Japanese industry as this story goes on. And I think the little insight that you provided with the graphic of rarity value, rare earth price index, and how it's skyrocketing in recent years is obviously these technologies are becoming more ubiquitous and we're using more iPhones and iPods and all that kind of newfangled technology. Obviously, this is going to be extremely important in the years ahead. So, it's a boon for Japan, I guess, which they definitely need after the havoc of last year.
I think on a couple of notes. One, this almost reminds me of James Cameron and Avatar, and they're in that film, they're looking for something called unobtainium, which is the most unimaginative name I've always laughed when I heard that was the main kind of McGup plot device of that movie. But aside from that, I think it shows someone like James Cameron knows exactly what's going on, and ultimately kind of resource wars like this, I think, you know, are what we may see more of in the future.
Yeah, that was kind of my first thought with this story, because I was thinking there's a lot of disputed islands and things between Japan and Russia, for example, on the northern side of the islands here. And, you know, if it's in an area like that, it's definitely the war zone, the next battleground. But apparently this is inside Japan's economic zone. So we'll see if there's no other takers.
I think another way, and this relates to the kind of stories on cyberspacewar.com, a recent story about mining asteroids and a similar thing of, you know, maybe this one good asteroid might provide us with, you know, decades or even hundreds of years worth of rare earth minerals. That is, you know, the amazing kind of space war. And who owns, you know, who owns meteorites? That you could really fight about that.
And I'm sure they will, but again, there's the flashback to a story we covered on New World Next Week about asteroid mining. Did we cover that on New World Next Week?
You know, I think you're right. Yes.
So we cover so much, it's impossible to remember it all.
So James will land back on Earth with a piece from EcoWatch.org. First ever fracking wastewater test in Ohio reveals a stew of hazardous toxins. Results from a sample of brine from a hydraulic fracturing operation have revealed numerous hazardous materials, leaving many residents increasingly frustrated at the inaction of Ohio's Division of Natural Resources, the agency responsible for regulation of the state's shale development. The lab results indicate high levels of alpha particles, arsenic, barium, and many other contaminants, and are calls for the brine to be classified as hazardous, according to Ben Stout, professor of biology at Wheeling Jesuit University, who interpreted the results. Stout labeled the results as eerily similar to brine samples taken by West Virginia's Department of Environmental Protection. He describes the heavy metals found in the sample as grossly above standard, citing skyrocketing arsenic and barium levels that exceed the primary standard for acceptable drinking water concentrations by, 370 and 145 times, respectively. James, fracking, I think, has become, it's a known, of all the words that, you know, we think of and add to the lexicon each year. Again, it's amazing how kind of quickly we adapt to these new things and go, oh, yeah, you know, fracking, they're just doing it.
Well, absolutely. But the fracking is something that I've been watching. I haven't really commented on because I'm holding out for more data on it. I think a lot of people got freaked out by, you know, setting water on fire and things like that. But I think those were some reports that were not did not take into account all the variables, let's say. So I've still been sort of sitting back. And yes, they have come out and say that fracking does cause earthquakes, even in England, for example, but relatively low-level earthquakes. I'm still holding back on this because I'm always a bit concerned about jumping on the next green bandwagon and scaremongering. But stories like this one point to some real interesting results. So by all means, if people out there feel strongly about the fracking issue, by all means, feel free to send me links that you think are, you know, interesting and that have real data to back them up. And I'll be happy to look into them and maybe cover it in a future episode.
Well, and of course, I found this interesting in that, you know, the Ohio Valley, of course, is directly connected to my home state of West Virginia. Mm-hmm. A couple of other related notes posted along here. North Carolina closer to legalizing fracking because a legislator pushed the wrong button. There's more on that from allgov.com. And also from the GWPF.org, U.S. CO2 emissions plummeting towards 1990 levels, James, with a note on the anthropogenic global warming situation.
Absolutely. The GWPF, interesting. They keep up to date with a lot of news, and I believe they're pro-fracking, so people can take a look at that anyway.
Is that what that stands for? Is that the global warming pro-fracking?
I don't remember off the top of my head, but I don't think that's it.
James will return to the pharmaceutical industrial complex with one of the bigger stories in last week that, again, you know, you can sort of cheer about until you maybe kind of get the perspective and go, oh, I guess this maybe really isn't that large a deal. Largest case of healthcare fraud in U.S. history as GlaxoSmithKline, GSK, has agreed to plead guilty to misdemeanor criminal charges and pay $3 billion to settle what government officials said this past Monday is the largest case of healthcare fraud in United States history. The agreement, which still needs court approval, would resolve allegations that the British drug maker broke U.S. laws in the marketing of several pharmaceuticals. GSK targeted the antidepressant Paxil to patients under 18, the age of 18, when it was approved for adults only, and it pushed the drug Wellbutrin for uses it was not approved for, including weight loss and treatment of sexual dysfunction. This, according to an investigation led by the U.S. Justice Department, with more links for you. The company went to extreme lengths to promote the drug, such as distributing a misleading medical journal article and providing doctors with meals and spa treatments that amounted to illegal kickbacks. In a third instance, GSK failed to give the FDA safety data about its diabetes drug Avandia in violation of the U.S. law. So as I mentioned, there are links to a lot of this information from The Guardian, from Reuters and ABC News, and even, of course, Wikipedia. So you can go read about GlaxoSmithKline and just hit the jump down to controversies, James.
Well, no shortage of controversies to explore, I guess. But absolutely, just a tiny, tiny, tiny piece of the pie, really, and it's not the largest deal, as you were indicating. I mean, when people think about the things that have been swept under the rug, in which there was no, you know, big case settled for, with things like, was it Pfizer? I can't remember. No, Bayer, with the Factor VIII and the knowingly shipping HIV-tainted Factor VIII to Asia and to Europe. Just some of the things that have come out in the pharmaceutical realm have been so incredibly over the top that something like this is really just scratching the surface.
And again, it's a settlement, and it's, you know, it's one of those things where who knows what else would have come out if they didn't sort of like, okay, we'll pay it, game over. As long as we're talking about drugs, related drug note, there's an infographic which each one I try and check out. I'm looking at The Guardian right now. I think because it's so popular, they're having trouble keeping this new interactive data map of the world's drug usage up online. So it's not exactly live, but you can check it out. And I was surprised to even just quickly glance and see that Italy and New Zealand beat the U.S. in cannabis usage. But you can basically look at an interactive map of cannabis, cocaine, ecstasy.
The U.S. isn't even first in that anymore?
No.
God, you guys aren't first in anything anymore.
James, before we take the break and before we go through the skinny binge and purge. Another note from naturalnews.com. And again, we're living in the future, but what kind of future is it? Is it going to be? U.S. researchers create 30 genetically modified human babies. U.S. fertility researchers from the Institute for Reproductive Medicine and Science of St. Barnabas in New Jersey have created 30 healthy babies who have been genetically altered. You can link right to oxfordjournals.org for more. It's been confirmed that two of these children have the DNA of three parents. The babies were created when women were treated for infertility by Professor Jacques Cohen and his team. Their eggs had defects in tiny structures, and it goes on to just discuss exactly what has been done here. The interesting part about the post, I think, for me, is all the other related videos and information that my man Adam in Nova Scotia, helping out on Food World Order, has posted along the age of transitions, James, and designer babies and genetic modification.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, I hope people do explore that, because The Age of Transitions, of course, by our old friend Aaron Franz, an extremely important documentary, and all of the ways that I hope that listeners to this program understand this is leading, because it isn't just about what was being done specifically in this particular case, but it's the idea of starting to go down that path of altering babies genetically so that we start to open up all sorts of possibilities that have hitherto only been science fiction nightmares. But I think we all understand how this can be going down a very, very bad path indeed.
Like Gattaca.
Like Gattaca. Good point. All right. Coming up against another break, but we'll be back with the Binge and Purge and James Evan Pilato, foodworldorder.com, right after these messages. Welcome back, friends. We are here on Corbett Report Radio going over the Food World Order. Once again, all of these stories are available from foodworldorder.com, which is one of the many websites of our guest, James Evan Pilato, who is also, of course, running the New World Next Week at newworldnextweek.com, cyberspacewar.com, mediamonarchy.com, etc. So I hope people will check out all of that family, the kingdom of websites there. And there was a caller who called in to ask whether James is also living in Japan, and let's clarify, I am James Corbett, I'm living in Japan, James Evan Pilato is living in Portland, Oregon, so different sides of the Pacific, different sides of the big pond, I guess.
James, we now reach, as we do always in these second segments of these updates and episodes, if you will, we do what we call the Binge and Purge, and again, for folks, that's just where I post the collected headlines through the week that didn't make their own individual post on the website. This week is much, much shorter than weeks in the past. James, I think no other reason than for sometimes you collect a lot of news and then other times you just have to do a smaller amount. Of course, it is now, it's officially summer in America, and you can just see the kind of general traffic on the web kind of go down. And actually, myself, James, I'll be out of town next week. I should tell you.
So you will not be on the program. Okay. Good to know.
Make that note. But the Binge and Purge this week is a short one. I call it Celebrity Security Scandal and More, and starts out with a great video, which I'm surprised has not made bigger rounds. And it's actor Rob Schneider, who you may know from Saturday Night Live and goofy comedy.
And every Adam Sandler movie ever.
Exactly. But he's talking about vaccines and corporate greed and basically saying, you know, I'm against government coercion. I'm for parental rights. And you can see him start to talk about, you know, I found out, you know, the states, you know, sterilized people. And you can see that now he's gotten turned on to what is going on. And you can see that he's done his research and knows what he's talking about. It's always, of course, a little lamentable that it always feels like the people who do speak out against the New World Order are the kind of nutty, strange folks.
People who have already been demonized and have put their own foot in their mouth enough times that, maybe they're speaking out will actually feed into the system instead of going against it. But absolutely, hats off to anyone who is speaking out against this and putting facts into the debate. And people who haven't seen that video, people who don't even want to see that video because it's Rob Schneider, I still suggest you go and watch it because he does make some good points. And I think he's exactly right on this point anyway. It's a question of health freedom. And even if you do love the vaccines and worship everything that comes out of Big Pharma's posterior, you still have to at least advocate for the freedom of people to do what they want with their bodies.
I think that can relate back to, James, your larger thesis of this episode about freedom at large. Some of the other bits on this, Benjamin Purge, quickly, James, a couple of wrap-ups on, of course, Obamacare and some quotes, some interesting quotes from food industry, you know, execs and folks reacting to the Obamacare decision. GMO food labels are costly and unnecessary, says this op-ed that comes from the Star Tribune. Unauthorized stroll past lack security at CDC Bioterror Lab in Georgia, Monsanto, taco copters, and a little bit of satire, James. All that, so much more on foodworldorder.com.
All right, I hope people are checking it out, and I'm assuming the radio show will be on as normal tomorrow?
Absolutely.
Tell people again how they can listen in.
They can listen live on Revere Radio, and it's MediaMonarchy.com. It's 10 a.m. Pacific time.
That's right. Well, I hope everyone will tune in for that. So, James, thanks again for your time.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
No problem. And thank you to all of you out there for listening in. Once again, I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. I suggest you check out my website if you haven't yet done so. And until tomorrow night, that's it for me. So thank you for listening and take care.